In the context of our desire for revival and reformation, what is the role of prayer? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host for a new series, continuing series on revival and reformation. And our topic for this week is prayer, the heartbeat of revival. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Daryl Bigger, also a member of the School of Theology and assistant to the president at Walla Walla University. Now, let's come to that leading question. And what in the world does prayer have to do with revival and reformation? Can you add enough hours to your clock, prayer time, to make it happen? Or
But that kind of prayer for me is an attitude toward life rather than minutes spent doing or saying something specific. If we want a revival to connect us with God in a very personal way, then it makes perfectly good sense that we would want to spend time in God's presence. Mm-hmm. So prayer for me is much broader than just the content of what is included in that time, but it's the context of being in God's presence.
Wasn't it Randy Roberts who was commenting and says that he and his wife, if they ever say, okay, we need to have some quality time to talk, and they just sit down, nothing happens. But if they go for a walk somewhere, mm-hmm. they just chatter all the time. Mm. And I think maybe there may be a parallel there. Okay, yes. I'm going to talk with God, and we're going to make this revival yes. happen. It just doesn't yeah. work. Dave?
Alden, I've heard you talk about a former teacher who you reported as saying to young preachers that they should not preach on the subject of prayer because they don't know enough to do so. I'm intrigued by that because I have spent a lot of time thinking about prayer. And I happen to believe that prayer is a key component in a revival. But prayer itself is a fascinating thing because for some people it's a great wrench that reaches up to heaven and they can twist God's arm to get whatever they need. And the more people they can get to pray with them, the more people hang on the wrench, the more likely God is to deliver. In their minds, prayer is kind of a magic thing, you know, or a mm-hmm. manipulative thing. Mm-hmm. Although I do agree that the Bible says we are to ask for things that we need. So I'm not diminishing it. I think that the mechanistic element is
But the Bible says God already knows what you need.
That's true.
So
that's
we need
true.
To plug that one in somewhere along the line
yeah.
as well.
I think that prayer is sometimes a release. It's a de-stressor. You can go and rant and rave even in prayer and rid yourself of anguish and stuff by talking to God. I don't think either one of those are very profound. I think the part of prayer that fascinates me and challenges me a great deal is the idea of prayer as a crucible in which self gets crushed and subsequently aligned with the will of God. That, I think, is the challenging part of prayer. And I think it's this third element of prayer that I think is a key component in revival, is that when human beings are willing to humble themselves in prayer and tame their souls, tame their rambunctious souls and their autonomous souls, and enter a quest in trying to figure out what God would have me do here and now, then I think you are getting close to the kind of prayer that is partially instrumental in revivals. And you know, that kind of prayer is the human soul tends to rebel against that because mm-hmm. the autonomy of the person or of the soul is very, very, very deeply embedded in sinful human beings. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've said too much.
Mm. Well, one of the things that you said many months ago, Dave, and I really like it. He said you should spend enough time in your devotions to tame the soul.
Yeah. Every day the soul needs to be tamed.
It needs to be tamed. Yeah. Yeah. And the closer you come to thinking that you've got the soul tamed,
yeah.
the more likely it is that it's not tamed.
Yeah. I am regularly struck when I teach classes about Christian spirituality, I'm regularly struck with the advantage students discover in spending time in silence yeah. in God's presence yeah. just to quiet themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I'm fascinated by you have in your notes for this week that you gave us the parable of the Pharisee and the poor man, the publican. And mm-hmm. That to me is a profound story.
Yep.
That the guy who had all his religion lined up the correct way and he knew how to pray and made these big speeches is passed by. But the man who would not even look up to heaven but cried out for God to be merciful to him, that one was heard. Mm-hmm. And that I think is that's the great challenge that faces humanity.
Well, my personal conviction is that arrogance and pride may be our greatest challenge all the way around.
Well, I think pride is the worst of sins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as soon as things start to work well, you think, got this all worked out.
Yeah.
In fact, there's one of the things in the study guide that I put in there. It's from C.S. Lewis. It's the Apologist's Evening Prayer. And I'd just like to read it here. It's just two short verses. From all my lame defeats, and oh much more, from all the victories that I seem to score, from cleverness shot forth on thy behalf, at which, while angels weep, the audience laugh, from all my proofs of thy divinity, thou who wouldst give no sign, deliver me. Thoughts are but coins, let me not trust instead of thee, their thin-worn image of thy head, from all my thoughts, even from my thoughts of thee, O thou fair silence, fall and set me free. Lord of the narrow gate and the needle's eye, take from me all my trumpery, lest I die.
Wow.
Mm.
You know, I think there's a reason why Jesus didn't. I mean, he'd spend all night in prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we don't have a clue as to what he did. The prayers that he taught us take less than just a few seconds to go through them.
And yet there are several people who have written about prayer in conversational tones. It's dialogue with God.
Yeah.
And it's a challenging dialogue because when you're talking to a human being, you get direct feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're talking with God, well, sometimes you get direct feedback, but it comes in the form of convictions and impressions and ideas that mm-hmm. emerge. It doesn't come in terms of necessarily audible things, although some people will talk about that. I think the realization in the soul that I am at point A and God would like me at point Y.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I then move by surrendering my will and bending toward the will of God? And that's a process that sometimes is very quick in human life, mm-hmm. but other times it's very long. And sometimes it's true, we have to go through adversity to surrender that autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one of the things I find so challenging is if I begin to talk to God about the people who are in my life for a particular day, I discover all kinds of things.
Yeah.
People that I don't even want to pray about, which means I have to pray about them all the more.
Yeah.
And the people who potentially irritate me, they get more prayers from me than just about anyone else. And they're not the kind of, I hope the Lord will take care of you. But Lord, take care of my soul. So that I will not be irritated by this particular set of circumstances or that.
You know, Alden, you remind me that there have been a number of occasions in my life when I was faced with a very challenging decision, and I told some friends of mine, you know, I don't want to pray about that. And let me explain what I mean by that, is that, you know, praying is dangerous. If you open yourself up to what God might have in the offing for you, you run the risk of actually moving in the direction away from what you would like to do toward what God would like you to do. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's an ideal that should happen. But you understand in our humanity, all of us as human beings, we tremble at that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, with a smile on my face, I told people sometimes, I don't even want to pray about that. I, of course, ended up praying about it. But, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. praying this prayer of I call them crucible prayers, is dangerous business for autonomous humans.
Mm-hmm.
But it's precisely the kind of medicine we need.
I absolutely agree.
And see, I think that this is what, if there's any kind of prayer that can be found underneath a revival, it's that kind of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of prayer.
So it's an orientation toward life that rather than a list of requests. And that's part of maturation, I think, when we teach our children to ask for specific things, and it sets us up to assume that prayer, we go to God and pray when we need something. And that limits God's that limits our perception of what God can do to us, for us, to what we perceive to be our needs. Mm-hmm. And how short-sighted is that?
Well, I still am amazed at the Psalms as a collection of prayers. Mm-hmm. You don't have any guidance here. You know, this is what you do first, this is what you do second. They're also very honest, yeah. You know, and half of them are complaints, which mm-hmm. is really quite astonishing.
Yes.
Well, Darrell, I want to add something to you. You know, we also hear all these prayer stories that people talk about where you prayed for something and boom, in a moment, it was accomplished. And I don't discount the fact that God answers prayers like that. I remember as a child having a prayer like that answered, but I don't think that's the profoundest dimension of prayer. Mm-hmm. If you want to see a revival in your own life and in that of a community, people have to surrender their autonomy and they have to bend themselves toward what they believe God is asking of them, and it requires the humbling of self. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the hardest battle in human life.
And the whole notion of revival, you emphasize accurately, I think, that revival is not based on individual responses to individual prayer requests, but it is a molding and shaping of one's life. Mm-hmm. And then that spills over to other people.
And I think that's where spiritual power comes from in the first place. You know, we all know people who, when they speak, we listen because there seems to be an ethos about them. And I think it comes from the taming of the soul in prayer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are some favorite examples I have of people who have done this. But I would like to make the point that even when you pray that kind of prayer, there's not a mechanical connection between that and revival. Revival is not produced solely by my attitude and by my walk with God.
Yeah. One last text I'd like to focus on, we raised earlier, and we have just a few moments here. That is, what does it mean that God knows everything that we need? Now, it's in the context of Sermon on the Mount, where it says, don't be like the Gentiles, for they multiply words. Your Father knows what you need before you ask him. What does that mean in the context of what we're doing here?
I'm struck by our son-in-law's view of prayer. He's a person who in young adulthood became a Christian. And he says that prayer is not intended to change our reality so much as to give us courage to face what's there, mm-hmm. the wisdom to understand God's will, and the strength to follow through on what God's call is to
them. I like that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. We'll come back to that because this question of revival involves all of us, but our time is up now, and we'll need to take a quick look at next week. Our discussion is the Word, the foundation for revival. I want to thank my conversation partners, Dave Thomas and Darrell Bigger, and I want to thank Chad Ofterhaar, our program engineer, and all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.